I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a visit with Wesley Keegan at Tailgate Beer. Keegan distributes his wide array of craft beers around the state of Tennessee, while the overseas market is clamoring for his beers to the point that it's rationed and sold only by the single can in England. Come along for a visit at the brewery with owner Wesley Keegan, who can barely keep up with the explosive growth of his business. With an average of 30 beers on tap every week, they roll out another 2 beers every single week in addition to his long list of standard raves, such as the legendary Peanut Butter Stout. It started out as a seasonal fall offering, but the demand has propelled its popularity year-round. Keegan's facility is out of town a ways, so he decided to offer pizzas too, and they have become a draw all on their own.
Got a little ring that's handed down, a heart that wants to hang around. They're both used but good as new. If I love you, you love me too.
Wesley Keegan, the founder and brewmaster at Tailgate. Tell us about your brewery and what you have here.
Yeah, thanks for being here. We're in Nashville. We're in West Nashville. We've got a 16,000 square foot brewery out here on 7.5 acres. And you probably noticed our swimming pool out front. We're putting another 10,000 square feet on right now. A big addition. And one of the neat things about Nashville and breweries is that we're constantly expanding. So we're actually in the tail end of ours right now. Put a very large new brew house in here too.
You're about 10 years old?
Yep.
How did it happen? Did you grow up doing home brew? Or?
I feel like I'm a little bit unorthodox. I started this when I was 21 years old. My late father thought of the name Tailgate Beer, and when he trademarked it back in 2004, he put the application in and Anheuser-Busch contested it because they were the official beer of tailgating at the time. So I don't come from money, grew up very, very low means, you could say, and he just kind of let it run the course. When it was awarded to him, he sat on it for a few years. I was putting myself through school, San Diego State, and he comes to me and says, hey, you should get yourself out of school. And I said, Daddy, I'm putting myself through school. What do you mean I should get myself out? And he kind of gives me the, well, I'll give you this name if you can go do something with it. And I was a hobby home brewer at best. I've been a very, very lucky brewer. But the long story short is the name is what started it.
Isn't that interesting? A name creates a business.
Well, I went to school for business. And what they always taught you, this is kind of pre-recession, and in retrospect, it feels like we opened our doors and the economy closed theirs. But they would always teach you, you know, go swing the bat. And if you've got some sort of differentiator available to you, then, you know, that's a good place to start. And that was really kind of what it was.
Interesting. So when you started the business and you fired it up, what was it like? What was happening?
Well, we started actually in San Diego, and we're kind of like the story of modern Nashville. We relocated here. Which kind of feels like everybody now, you know, you don't meet a lot of locals. The joke is that they're unicorns now, you know, because there's so many transplants coming to such an exciting city. When we started in San Diego, we grew to 14 states of distribution out of San Diego quickly. And then as the industry changed, we decided to focus on locals. So we 100% consolidated and moved to a brand new state, which was Nashville.
And what attracted you to leave San Diego and come to Tennessee?
Well, it wasn't the surf, right? I mean, it was... There's a couple of different things. The main thing is there's the business component. You know, Nashville is great for small business, and a lot of our retail partners asked us to.
Are there economic incentives that were tempting?
Beer industry is kind of interesting in that a lot of, you know, our tasting room is really big here, and so a lot of the things that we had available to us in the tasting room are service-type jobs. But, you know, we've got over 30 people here today, more than a year ago today.
Employees.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we're growing quickly. We've got a lot of people. Everybody makes a good living here. But it wasn't necessarily like economic development type things. It was just that Tennessee was positioned well. The craft beer scene is really growing. It's been really exciting. Gave us an opportunity where we could come in, and I could actually move close to some family, too. There was a little bit of a personal aspect. I had some family out here.
Were you ahead of the curve in the brewing world, the microbrew, craft brew industry here in Tennessee and Nashville?
Here, I think we're right at the cusp of a really, really exciting kind of explosion.
Locally. Ten years ago.
Yeah.
When you fired up.
Yep.
Who else was here? What was your competition?
Here in Nashville, you know, there was only a couple of other breweries. But again, we were in San Diego 10 years ago, where there was almost 40 when I started. You know, there's less than maybe 20 in Nashville today. So it's funny because a lot of people will come up and tell me what great timing I have. And it doesn't feel like I've had great timing all the time, but nowadays it feels pretty good.
In the back of the house, how many people are back there? What's your production? What do you do?
On the brew side, so we have a number of different components. We have the brewery, we have our pizza kitchen, we made a scratch pizza kitchen, we have our tasting room, and so on. So back of the house can kind of cover a number of different things for us. But with the brewery, we've got about six guys back there full-time outside of myself. We're brewing every day. We have a really small system that we refer to as our lab brewery, where we do a lot of test brewing. And right now in our tasting room, we have 30 different beers on draft that are all unique, all brewed in-house. And anything ranging from like something we just tapped this week as a fall lager to our most popular and most award-winning beer, a peanut butter milk stout. And because it's such small batch, we do a lot of experimental things that maybe don't sound like the best idea. And some of them turn into things like our hot chicken IPA.
When people think of tailgate, what do they think of beer-wise?
The funny thing is, if I'm walking around in a tailgate t-shirt, people stop me and talk peanut butter milk stout. It won best experimental beer in the world last year in the World Beer Awards, and it just won best flavored stout or porter in the U.S. this year in the same competition. So that's our most recognizable beer for sure.
That's really distinctive. To tell you the truth, I haven't heard of that before.
There's a couple of them out there now. You know, there's a couple of different peanut butter milk stouts or peanut butter porters or things along those lines. In our region, there's really not. And the first professional beer I ever brewed on a commercial scale was a milk stout. And then a couple years ago when we did relocate here, we tried peanut butter, and it was one of our initial offerings. And I thought it would be seasonal, and especially as hot as it gets in the South, I thought that we'd kind of slow down production. And every month we produce more than the month before. It's really been the most amazing thing we've ever done.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Where are you distributed? Where can somebody find your beer?
It's, again, unorthodox, right? So we went from 14 states of distribution to only Tennessee. And our goal is to be a great brewery in Tennessee. We are a little bit unique in that we do export. We export to the UK and Sweden, and then we also do a little bit in Australia. But the stuff that happens international is super exciting, too.
Is it kind of a cult following overseas?
It's starting to be, yeah. It's really amazing. The peanut butter milk stout and grapefruit IPA of ours just hit the stores over there locally. And they're allocating by the can. And, you know, it's funny because here, you know, we've got a lot more available volume and people can buy six packs. And we've got pretty good distribution in larger retailers like Kroger and Mapco and things like that locally. But over there, they're literally buying it by the can. And it's been a really, really exciting thing for us.
That's so cool. And over there, is it, you don't have any competition?
Oh, there is. There's a great, it's almost kind of like here.
But that specific beer.
For peanut butter, yeah, I don't think there's a lot of peanut butter beers, but there's a lot of great beer, right? You think about like the UK or you think of Belgium and you think about great beer, but it's different. You know, American craft beer has really started to spread outside of the U.S., and so a lot of the dynamics that we're experiencing here in Tennessee, where craft beer is expanding past domestic, which has kind of been slow to adopt the last 10, 20 years in the middle of the country, is now happening internationally too. So even we can our beer, and cans are relatively new international as well as in the South.
And why are people going to canned beer?
The short answer is it's the best package for beer. I mean, flat out, you think about the things that can ruin beer, and it's light exposure and oxygen and heat, and cans combat all of those things. And the funny thing is almost everybody universally agrees that a keg on draft, you know, beer on draft is the best package, but there's a lot of things that happen between that keg and your glass that could make your beer contaminated is the dramatic word, right, the industry word. But make it not so fresh. In a can, it's literally completely closed until you open it, and you can put it straight to your mouth.
Just from an economic standpoint, the weight of shipping glass versus can be an advantage for you?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, and that's spot on. You know, you look at things, you know, as a small business, you're always looking at ways to improve your footprint economically and your green footprint, right?
From an environmental standpoint, what are the advantages of the can versus glass?
Well, they recycle better. You know, depending on who you talk to, right? The glass industry has a different opinion than the aluminum industry. But depending on who you talk to, you know, glass doesn't ever actually fully recycle, and aluminum does. So that's one. And then your point about shipping, absolutely. You know, the amount of weight for a pallet of bottles equivalent in the pallet of cans, I think the statistic is something like 60% difference. It's amazing. So we can get a lot more economy out of the number that we're shipping. Plus, it's a lot more environmentally friendly down to the trucks. They use less gas. The weight's better. It's really, you know, better product, better package, better for you. I mean, it's the best way to go. And that's why so many breweries, the new ones, are switching to it.
That's really fascinating, those little things you wouldn't necessarily think about.
Yeah, and that's the cool thing about craft beer. There's so much opportunity out there and so many smart people in the industry that people are always trying new things, and that's kind of the dynamic like we have with our lab brewery that I mentioned, is that you can experiment at a small level where a lot of the big companies are really slow to shift, right? And it's like that in almost every industry. But that's why if you look at craft beer as an industry, you'll see big breweries in cans or new breweries, because all the ones that are kind of in the middle there have so many economic variables that have to go into play because they're already paying down other equipment that doesn't keep up with the change in technology.
Kind of stuck by being too big.
I think so, and I think that that's going to change a little bit. But if you look at 10 years ago, cans may not have been the best, or 20 years ago now. You know, time flies a little bit, but I'd say probably more like 20 years ago, there weren't protective liners in cans, and there's a lot of things that changed with technology that have made it a better package for sure.
Going forward, the craft brew industry, the microbrews, the brew pubs, is just exploding across the country.
Yeah.
Do you think it will become ultimately a game shifter where the big boys might be eroded by the little guys?
Well, I mean, we're seeing that, you know, every year. The craft beer industry has increased every year that I've been in it, you know, and again, we're going on 10 years, you know, to where I think when we started there was about 10% growth every year, and then now we're seeing 15, 16, 17% growth as an industry. Us as a brewery have doubled every year, which is incredible numbers for any small business, right? But, you know, the neat thing about craft beer is if you look at the numbers, there's roughly about 5,000 ballpark numbers of breweries in the U.S. But the vast majority of those are very small neighborhood pubs, you know, 1-2-person operations where people are just kind of very content brewing and running a small little tasting room. So when you look at that, it really kind of slows down the bubble conversation. And the thing that I've always said is there's so much room for everybody. And it's that old cliche, rising tide lifts all boats. The more breweries we get, the more people are learning about craft beer, because we get people that come in here every day and they've never had one. And that's a small sample size, but it's pretty interesting to see. The big boys are paying attention and they are losing market share. Again, when I started, craft beer was less than 1% of the beer industry. Now I think it's like 3-4, it's much, much bigger. And all that stuff comes out of big beer's pocket. So that's why they're bringing up some of these other great craft brands.
Do you have any battles in your distribution statewide in placement and location?
We're fortunate, and I personally believe that the market kind of decides. You know, so if you put a great quality product out there, it doesn't really matter who your competition is. You know, we're very conscious about the quality. If it's not something that we're proud of, we're not going to put it to market. We'll dump it. If it's something that we don't think is priced right, we're going to make sure that it is. And it's just one of those things that all of those things get answered for us very quickly.
So you get eye level in the grocery store?
Yeah. I mean, we do, you know, and that's, and if it doesn't sell, you don't, right? And so that's nothing to do with relationships. That's nothing with how hard you work. If you don't have a great product, you can, it only carries you so far. The neat thing about the beer industry is it's people will tell you what they think, you know, quickly.
You'll know right away.
Yeah, and in Music City, it's kind of fun because we kind of always draw the parallel of the music industry, because I can't play an instrument to save my life, but right away I can tell if I like a song or not, right? And the beer industry is very, very similar, and that people will come in and they'll say, hey, who are you, the owner? Well, yeah, nice to meet you. Well, I think this is terrible. Great, thank you, you know? it's definitely...
You know right away.
Yes, but similarly if they love it. You know, and we've really hit a couple of home runs that have been very, very lucky for us.
Well, speaking of that, we talked about your peanut butter and milk, which sounds pretty cool. What would be the other kind of signature or iconic beer that people would think of you that's most in demand that people love?
One of our more popular ones lately has been what we call Southeast IPA. It was West Coast style in terms of the quantity and variety of hops that we put into the beer, again, coming from West Coast myself. But it's something that is really sort of devoid in the South. There's not a lot of big hoppy beers out here. And so we've been R&D'ing it since we got here. And then finally we found a beer that we were happy enough and proud enough of that we could give to the name Southeast IPA. And that's really starting to cut a little bit of a trail for us too. Because the IPAs as a category have been the number one selling beer as long as I've been in the industry. So it's been definitely something you want to hang your hat on.
Very cool. And here, like, I see a table next to us, and they have a bunch of pizzas. And you mentioned that you have a pizza production here, so it's all fresh and local.
Mm-hmm. So we do everything. We started a scratch pizza kitchen. And I think kind of the thought process was, well, I've never been in the pizza industry, so we should start now. Probably not the most advisable of courses, but, again, my experience coming from Southern California, a lot of breweries didn't have kitchens, and there's a big food truck following and things like that. But out here, we had a tough time not having food.
You almost had to do it.
We didn't have a choice. I mean, we would tell people you could bring a peanut butter and jelly from home if you wanted to, and they'd look at us sideways. Like, why would we do that? So we started with a very modest kitchen, and we saw that people kept coming back, and then we kept adding. And when we invested in pizza, it was a very similar philosophy to the rest of the things that we did, was we sat down with our vendors and said, if this is not a quality product, we're not going to put it on our pizza. And it was kind of against what they would expect, right? They came in and they said, hey, this is the best priced pepperoni I have. And I said, okay, well, what's the best pepperoni you have? Because that's what we're looking for. And when we did that, we found that now people stop me, and I mentioned when they see my shirt, they say, hey, peanut butter. Now people stop the shirt, stop me when they see the shirt, and they say, you have the best pizza in town.
So I guess it follows, some people show up just for your pizza.
They do. And it's I mean, everything's a work in progress, right? And you have to be patient. It sounds silly saying that when I am still young, but it doesn't happen overnight. And the amazing thing is that just over the course of 6-7 months in pizza, you know, we tweak it every day. We're constantly changing it, and I'm putting on the pounds because of it. It's been something that you see the fruits of your labor, and people really, really do come just for pizza sometimes, and they bring their families too.
A couple years from now, I can see another addition here.
Yeah. I mean, we joke that maybe in a couple months we might be doing cheeseburgers or something. You know, things change really quickly around here.
No fear.
Yeah, why, right? If you're not evolving, you're not in business. And that's kind of what you see on, like, the Silicon Valley, or you see in, like, New York or things like that. And I think that that's just the real world. And just because we're in Nashville and we're removed from those kind of geographies doesn't mean that you can't compete at the same level. And we're seeing that we are. You know, we're on the shelf next to the same nationally distributed products, and we're out selling a lot of them. And then when you see a lot of big brands coming in here making pizza, we're making better pizza too.
I love it. I wish I had more time. I'd love to have a pizza.
Yeah.
But we got to go. Wesley Keegan, thank you so much.
Hey, it's been my pleasure. Really enjoyed having you. Thank you.
You too. It's been great coming out here. Wish we could stay all afternoon. Website?
Yeah, the best thing that we tell everybody is check our socials. We've got a great active social. It's at Tailgate Beer, just one word. Nice and simple. Send us a tweet, Instagram, Snapchat. We're doing all the above.
Thank you so much.
Been my pleasure.
You've been listening to Wesley Keegan, the founder and owner of Tailgate Beer. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Nashville, Tennessee. The underbed music, If I Love You, was performed by Nashville musician Gabe Dixon. To learn more about Gabe and his music, log on to GabeDixon.com.
If I love you, you love me too. If I love you, you love me too.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com. Our associate producers from the San Francisco Bay Area include Molly Blaisdell, Lori King, and Susie Rodriguez. Melissa Corbin reporting from Knoxville, Tennessee, Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, Rebecca Bingham, Hot Springs, Arkansas, and Steve Cook contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansas Songs on NPR affiliate KUAR.
I know I will, like I know I do. If I love you, you love me too. If I love you, you love me too. If I show my soul, would you share yours with me? Let the ages roll. We could go down in history. We could go if you love me. We'll be right back. share yours with me. Let the ages roam. We could go down in history. I don't have the words to say. I don't know if they've been made to show the way I feel for you. If I love you